Hello then everyone, welcome to this webinar discussion. I'm Francis Seeley from Enfield Voices in GlobalNet 21, and we do lots of interviews, but this is a rather special one because it's dealing with a very sort of topic which has caused a lot of furor. The government recently gave money so that local authorities could set up low traffic neighbourhoods, and quite a lot of them have been started right across London, but it's created immense opposition in most of those areas. Two of those councils have already withdrawn their low traffic neighbourhood. It's led, I think, to the resignation of one leader. So you can see there's been quite a bitter dispute going on. And yet there are probably some common elements between the different tribes, if you like, and maybe that's what we can explore tonight. Now, we're doing two webinars, one next week and one this week. And this week we're doing a webinar interview with people who have reservations about the low traffic neighbourhoods, and next week with supporters of the low traffic neighbourhoods. And today we've got four people we're going to interview. Andrew, who's from Bows and Bounds, Sue, who's also from Bows and Bounds, Philip, who's from the Winchmore Hill Residence, it's Neil, isn't it? It was from Winchmore Hill Residence, and Philip, who's from the Lakes Estate. So let's begin this and see if we can go through what will be, I'm sure, a really interesting conversation. Can I start with you then, Sue? And what I'd like to begin to do, if we can, first of all, is to ask you this, and you know that. There has been tremendous opposition, as I've said, to low traffic neighbourhoods across London and here in Enfield as well. And people who have, you know, objected to your opposition have said, but we're trying to get cleaner environments, we're trying to get more traffic calming. And they're sort of indicating that maybe you're not doing that. But that's not true, is it? I mean, you are in favour of better streets in a way, aren't you? Quieter streets, of traffic calming and a clean environment.
Okay, well, let me start off by saying that I think we find ourselves as very reluctant participants in a social media war. And the thing about social media is that it's very dependent on polarizing us into tribes. So immediately, if we say we have reservations about the LTN, those four sort of try and pick us off by stating that we're climate change naysayers, we're petrol heads, we're rat runners, you know, and we simply don't like cyclists. Well, let's correct that perception here and now. We're cyclists, we're walkers, yeah? And actually, we make great use of public transport, because the one thing about our area, particularly in you know, when we represent Bounds and Bows, is that we have a fantastic public transport system. It's just at the moment, obviously, we're being encouraged not to use it. We simply do not think that this particular LTN closing off our roads is a very smart way. It's not a smart way at all.
Well, let's go into that. Let me ask you. I mean, you say you're all that, and that's great. And so you have really the same objectives as the lower traffic neighbourhood people. So why do you object to lower traffic neighbourhoods?
Well, I could talk about this for hours, and I certainly don't want to dominate the conversation. But actually, I think the irony, and let's just talk specifically about our LTN, because I'm sure some are more fit for purpose than others. But the thing is about our LTN is it's actually counterproductive to its intended aims. Basically, it doesn't reduce pollution and congestion. But what it does create is a whole multitude of problems, which I guess we will start to explore during this discussion.
Okay, so Philip, can I ask you, because you're in the Fox Lane, aren't you, area, and you've had experience of that. Could you tell me what the situation there is and what the problems you face there?
I really just reiterate initially what Sue says. You know, I'm not a petrol head. I was cycling today. I cycled all around the LTN area to have a look at it again. I walk. I'm just concerned with the inequality of the scheme and the fact that it's actually really getting in the way of my local businesses. I live in a very, very quiet road in Conway Road in the Lakes Estate, and it's still quiet. It was fairly quiet before. So I developed a bit of a concern about what was happening to our local businesses, especially with COVID-19 and how they're all being impacted. And just to localise it, so Alderman's Hill itself is suffering from a lot more traffic than it has before. And so I actually developed a questionnaire which I sent out to businesses in Alderman's Hill to get their opinions. And I'm just going to very briefly read a quick response from one of the businesses. It's, everyone will know this business. It's the pharmacy, an excellent pharmacy in Alderman's Hill. And I asked for comments from different businesses, and he wrote a very cogent one. And he just said, as a local pharmacy, we deliver free, at no cost to the patient, medicines to the housebound and those who many may be isolating. The LTN has added at least 30 minutes to the delivery time, so our driver is driving more, sitting in traffic. We've also noticed a reduced footfall in the pharmacy as people are discouraged by the increased traffic on Alderman's Hill. We're located on Alderman's Hill, and there is a steady stream of traffic, mostly stationary, pumping out fumes, which people working along Alderman's Hill have to breathe in. Now, that was just one response from 20 businesses that I spoke to in Alderman's Hill. So I'm just taking a very small area and just pointing out what's happening in one group of people who are adversely affected. Okay. I myself, personally, in my little road, I'm not massively affected, except that every time I walk into Alderman's Hill, I walk along the street and suck in fumes that I've never experienced in 27 years of living here.
Okay, let's go on then to Andrew. You live in the Bowes area yourself. Do you want to add anything to what Sue said about that area?
I think Sue's explained that kind of very eloquently. I mean, you know, I personally agree in theory with LTNs. I think it's just that, you know, the way that it's manifested itself in this area is just, you know, really not working. I mean, you know, we have had historically one particularly bad street of Warwick Road, which was horrible. Of course now that's all kind of problem solved. But really all that's happened is that traffic has now moved into, you know, other areas, which doesn't have anywhere near as big a voice as what Warwick Road has been able to build up over the years. So Kelvin Avenue, Spencer Avenue, Nightingale Road, Truro Road, you know, these are roads that were just quiet, moderately quiet kind of residential streets. You know, people bought houses on there thinking, hey, this is pretty good. And now all of a sudden have these huge problems, you know, and that's so unfair that, you know, that one street has, you know, has the problems been solved and has now resulted in so many other problems elsewhere. I think another point where, Sue, you know, I mean, we've talked about this kind of many, many times, but, you know, I'm also a cyclist. I am also, have worked with many, many organisations over the years to be, campaigning, for climate change and, the problems that we have, with the environment at the moment. And what you've got to do, and I've seen this so many times, is that you've got to take a community with you, right? And what has happened here is that something has simply been imposed upon us and the community is not behind it. What it is that it's so bitterly divided about this, right? So this is where I kind of see, you know, the big problems.
Okay, and Neil, you are also involved in this, but you're from Winchmore Hill, aren't you? Would you like to tell us about what you feel about it?
I drive a car, I walk, I used to be a cyclist. I find this a very nice area to walk around, so very enjoyable most of the time. I'm on the Residents Association at Winchmore Hill, and we've obviously been looking into what's been going on. And one concern to us is that we don't think our area is particularly affected by a lot of the sort of traffic issues that have been discussed elsewhere, but we also know that at least two or three LTNs are planned for this area. And we feel that we're being railroaded into them. And what will happen is that green lanes will end up as with massive tailbacks. And I actually saw it the other morning. I had to go to a funeral on the other side of London. Fortunately, I wasn't going in the direction of Palmer's Green, but I'd never seen this before. At about 8:45, the traffic came all the way back, green lanes, as far as the eye could see, up to Mason's Corner. And I don't know the reason for it. The only thing I could think of was whether it was the impact of something going on in the Fox Lane area, and it was actually causing people to have no other through routes. On the subject of the association, our view is generally 75-80% against the LTNs. Few people favour them. We've not issued any statements of policy on this to anybody locally. We're just really watching from the sidelines. But a few weeks ago, I went and did a survey one morning during the rush hour, and I walked around all the roads. It was 2 weeks after the LTN came in, and I published this on Nextdoor and elsewhere. And basically what it showed was roads that hadn't been chock-a-block before were, and pollution levels had visibly increased. And the evidence was there in the photographs that I took.
Okay, so
that was really what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, the view is, of course, that that the traffic that will sort of block Apple Road will eventually evaporate, and we'll come to that in a minute. But are you arguing, Sue, that really it doesn't do that? That what happens is you clear up some roads, but it's just dispersed somewhere else?
Well, I think other people have already described some of the impact that we've had. And Andrew is quite right. This particular scheme is designed around, you know, a Warwick Road and a long-standing campaign. And, you know, we have every sympathy with Warwick Road. But crumbs, has it come at a cost to the rest of us? I mean, you know, I was driving yesterday at 8 o'clock up to Muswell Hill. And the traffic on Bounds Green Road and all the way up Downsford Road and Albert Road just had to be, you know, it was out of this world. And it makes particular junctions very difficult. But Andrew's already listed some of the roads that have been adversely affected by this. And I think what we find quite frustrating is that if the councillors did what we are clearly doing, walking around our neighbourhood, they would actually see the impact in terms of displaced traffic. It's visible for all to see. And of course, you know, you could argue that actually this is environmental NIMBYism, actually. This is basically just displacing the traffic. And I can go on to talk about evaporation if
okay. But the argument that they give and that government gives and the local authority gives is that you will get some trouble for a few months. You'll get some, traffic jams in some areas, but you will get a time when that sorts itself out through traffic evaporation. And people cite things like Waltham Forest and so on. Andrew, do you think there will be, after 6 months, traffic evaporation, or do you think you've got a real long-term problem?
So you're citing a very particular scheme which had a very, very different, you know, circumstance there, right? You know, let's face it here, you know, we are tied to the A406. It's a completely different circumstance. And, you know, what we're getting all the time is that we're getting kind of information from Enfield Council and also from Better Streets as well, who are telling us about, you know, the amount of cars are simply kind of going to go up year on year on year, right? I mean, you know, obviously many, one would hope those cars are going to be hybrids or electric, but car use is going to increase. How possibly can traffic evaporate, right? All that's going to happen is that if you're having localized LTNs, that particular area will be, the pro- problem will go away, but it will simply be pushed onto other streets. And very often, and this is possibly the most sad thing about it, is that very often those streets are sometimes not as well-to-do, that they're poorer communities, certainly communities that haven't got anywhere near the kind of voice that has been established by, you know, some of the big kind of campaign groups for, you know, an organization like Warwick Road, for example. So I'm afraid, Francis, I simply cannot see that. I feel as though we're just being, you know, spun an untruth there.
I mean, one of the arguments, Andrew, or maybe you could take this up from us later on, and you talk about that it's, you know, so you said it's sort of NIMBYism, but some people have argued, not just ordinary people on the street, but some academics have argued, particularly, I think, someone from the Centre of Economics and Business Research, that really what is happening is you're discriminating against working class people on low income, and that what this is doing is it's setting up a sort of class war when we thought the part of that was over, because lots of people on low incomes will buy houses where the traffic is going through now and they suffer the pollution because those houses are cheaper. So you have people on well-off houses discriminating against people who buy lower houses, and that creates a class division. Now, is that a myth, or is that something you think is happening?
I think we can definitely see example of that, and I think that we can also kind of see it as well, you know, on a point of, you know, what kind of Sue raised earlier of, you know, that we are, of course, in this kind of, you know, social media world, and, you know, that what we so often listen to is the, you know, is the areas that can, or the people that can make kind of the loudest noise. So, you know, so those stories are not necessarily going to be told. But another very, very big point that's kind of happening here is that, it, you know, people need obviously to move around, yeah? So the only way that traffic would actually evaporate is that if there are choices of other things to do. Now, there's been no thought or planning in order to be building any form of other, you know, cycling, you know, structure or any other ways or other bus routes or any other kind of, you know, transportation in order for people to get around. And certainly in our area, there's nowhere to travel to. We've got a Nisa local, and that's it, right? You know, and most people, what we would be doing is that we'd either be traveling up to Southgate or to Muswell Hill or to Crouch End. You know, you can't do your local shop on a bike, okay? You know, this has got to need to be something where, of course, Francis, it just simply will not evaporate.
Okay. Okay. One of the other things that is quite clear in this really sad conflict is that it's very emotional, because it impacts on people's lives. Yes. And, you know, they don't give a reason. They talk about how they feel about it, how it's affecting their lives. Now, we've seen the photos, for example, on Brownlow Road and how it's backing almost to Coney Hatch Lane, for example. Mm. What's the impact, Philip, on people living there, on their physical and their mental health?
You mean in the area, in my area, the Lakes Estate, for example?
Well, generally, I mean, do you think...
I think that, you know, following on from what Andrew says, I mean, one is aware that, for example, you know, we have the M25, which comes in at Junction 24. The route to the North Circular and the route into London is to come down through Cockfosters and Southgate. You know, the amount of imaginative travel you can do with driving your car to get somewhere, you know, to come and find a different route in, is very limited. And so you're pushing cars now onto roads like Moreton Way, which is now experiencing much higher traffic volumes. It's just, you know, for example, another shop I was talking about in Alderman's Hill is the fantastic florist called Pomegranate. The guy there said that he wanted to take some flowers to a hearse in Broadwalk, and to get to that venue would normally take him 5 minutes by cutting through the normal way, rat running in certain people's eyes. He would go to Broadwalk in 5 minutes. It took him 50 minutes at 9 o'clock in the morning to get up to it. So I think the way it's impacting people's lives is it's impacting their businesses, and also affecting the stress levels of sitting in cars in traffic jams unnecessarily, because it's actually not, they don't need to be doing it.
So So, I mean, Sue, would you say, for example, that it has affected the mental health of people in the area you live in? I mean, I've heard of, for example, children with asthma being affected and so on. Have you had any experience of the stress that it might have caused?
Well, I'm certainly aware of a number of people that have suffered stress. So, for instance, the difficulty is if you take families who have to juggle complex lives and you're trying to get to work and you're trying to get children to different schools, for instance, and all your normal routes have been blocked, that is incredibly difficult. And I certainly remember hearing about one story about a mother who has a child who's on the autism spectrum. And that child actually is finding it really difficult because a very different route has to be taken to school. And, you know, and children react very differently, don't they, to car journeys. And if the car journey is much longer, you know, that means that the stress at the beginning and the end of the day is actually much, much, much greater. But, you know, the reality is that many people, whether we like it or not, we have a society built around a car. So I was hearing a story today, and okay, it wasn't about our area, but it illustrates a particular point about someone who was looking for a caring job, someone who'd recently been made unemployed, and she was turned down simply because she couldn't drive. Yeah. And so, you know, this is the irony of it, that a lot of people, particularly now when they're losing jobs, they, in order to get a new job, sometimes they need a car. But actually now for us in our neighborhood, because we're caged in, actually planning journeys for us is a considerable lottery. You've got no idea how long our journey will take. And if you've got jobs, you've got kids to pick up, that makes life deeply stressful indeed.
Okay. What about, what about the issue of pollution? I mean, the people who support low traffic neighbourhoods say that this will reduce pollution, though there have been other research down in Strathclyde which suggests maybe it's the opposite. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I can only go by what I've seen when I was doing my survey, and that was there's obviously less pollution for the people who live in those roads in the LTN, but the roads surrounding it, which I was looking at, which was Bourne Hill, Cannon Hill, Aldermans, Green Lanes, still have people living on those roads, and they just bear the brunt of it. You know, I'll do another survey in 3 months' time and another one in 6 months' time and see if anything's changed. What I have asked, though, is whether there is actually any pollution monitoring going on. I sent an open letter to Councillor Ian Barnes earlier this week or end of last week, asking about the scrutiny on the LTN. And at the end of it, I asked how the pollution levels were going to be monitored and whether there was going to be some kind of assessment of the, you know, the quality of the scheme and whether it was beneficial on, you know, all the usual grounds.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come to that area of consultation and how you get information in a minute. I think that's really important. But one of the other big issues has been about emergency access, hasn't it, Andrew? The council says that they have consulted with the emergency services. And so everything is, you know, fine because they've done the right consultation. Now, do you accept that as being true? Because you seem to, or social media seems to...
Let me tell you a story. The day that the LTN was placed in York Road, there was a demonstration, and it was a heated day because, you know, lots of people were very, very angry about it. And Richard Eason from the council was actually present, and I was able to get the most senior policeman who was present at the time over. I told him a story about my daughter who was in fact mugged around this area about a year ago. I asked him the very, very simple question, asked the policeman the very simple question of, would you be able to get to such an incident quicker or slower? And he replied to me with, well, obviously slower, sir. And there was no acceptance of that of Richard Easton. It was an awful transaction. But I move on. There has obviously been some form of communication between Enfield Council and the emergency services. But here are the facts, right? We see weekly ambulances turning round on blue lights. We see it. We have a record of this. So whatever the conversation is that has happened, whatever we are being told, we see the reality of it. And it is only a matter of time that those things become more serious.
So, I mean, is a part of your opposition, and maybe, Neil, you could take this up. I mean, is part of your opposition that, you know, this has been done because of the government funding in a piecemeal way? You're not against a borough hall policy about traffic calming, are you? If it involved neighbouring boroughs, if it involved traffic for London, and there was an overall strategic approach, because some people argue that it's done, you know, on the hoof and not strategically overall.
I think if the council were to actually tell us what the full policy was and what they've actually known for the last 2 or 3 years, I think people would probably be quite shocked, because we would then understand why it's being rolled out the way it is. And I've read a lot of stuff about this that, you know, it goes back a long way, but it's only been drip fed to us, and the LTNs are just one aspect of it. So I don't think that I think it's almost like they just don't really want to engage with us and tell us what's really happening. You know, we're just learning about it as we go along.
Well, I mean, you say you're learning about it, and that's quite interesting because it sort of brings us to the area of consultation. And you said, Andrew, to begin with, you know, that when you do anything, you've got to bring the community with you. They need to be consulted. Philip, were you consulted at all on this by the council when this was set up? What sort of consultation did take place?
I wasn't particularly aware of it. You know, I'm not politically active. It wasn't something I was thinking about enormously. I vaguely heard that there'd been a convened consultation at Starbucks, which still existed in those days, which took place, and not many people went, and not many people had real information. So the first thing I knew about it was an actual a map with all the roads closed off, which included everything in Alderman's Hill and Fox Lane. In fact, it was basically shutting the entire area down. I sensed a lot of anger in the community about this, and a meeting was convened by people opposing it in Burford Hall. And there was a very, very, it was standing room only. It was back in January. It was absolutely enormous. But no one significant from the council came. A lot of very, very good plans were put out. A lot of very good ideas were talked about. And interestingly, I noticed that quite a few people from Bourne Hill were very, very alarmed about the plans. And as Neil has noticed himself, the Bourne Hill residents have been very, very adversely affected. In fact, I know of several people who had bought there and are massively regretting living in that road now because they have permanent traffic jams. So in answer to your question about the consultation, I was, as I say, I'm not particularly politically active. And so I wasn't really aware of things until we tried to find out more information. We always seem to be chasing our tails and and also the information that was given to us on a regular basis was quasi-scientific. We were told that, you know, exactly how many people would die if we didn't do this and that.
Okay. Well, I mean, you mentioned the meeting in Bourne Hill, and that no one from the council came. I mean, the person who's been in charge of this is the deputy leader of the council. Sue, have you ever asked him to come and meet you and talk this over? And did you get any response on that?
Yes, we have. And I'd like to start off by saying that, you know, Councillor Barnes is pretty new to the world of local government, and I don't think he's quite got the hang of the principle that he's supposed to represent all of his community, not just a few interest groups. And you know, I think one of the disappointing things is that particularly in this time of lockdown, you know, we're using Zoom at the moment. There's absolutely no reason, actually, why Barnes and officers couldn't Zoom with us just to actually hear firsthand what the problems are, but also to give him an opportunity to explain to us why he thinks this scheme is something that, that really works, particularly alongside all the others. You know, apart from, as Philip has said, actually spouting some very general statistics like 35% of all journeys in London are under 2 kilometres. Well, that's across London. So, you know, Barnes, I mean, the interesting thing is that, that we had a petition that went to Overview and Scrutiny Committee recently, and the less said about that meeting, the better, really. But one of the things he said was that he was open to consultation with people. And then he went on to contradict himself by saying, well, he was, you know, he was going to meet with one representative of different community groups that he himself has handpicked. Now, we've not, and he will only accept one representative. If three of us wanted to have the discussion with him, he's not prepared to do that. And you've got to ask yourself why. But we've not even heard yet when that meeting is going to be taking place. So I think we have a legitimate question, really. Is he listening to all of his residents? And then, and you know, Andrew may want to come in here, you've got to look at his social media presence as well, because he's very active on sites that are pro, but he just won't engage with anyone else. So we've got this scheme. He's coming across as very biased. So the idea that it is experimental actually doesn't ring true with us, I'm afraid.
So you said that Andrew might want to come in. So let him come in. I mean, what is the sort of consultation you would like to have if you could have? I mean, a scrutiny committee, but no one had a chance to speak on that. Yeah. And that was quite a shambles in a way. But what sort of consultation would you like to have?
Okay. Well, first of all, we need to be kind of really, really clear on what the aims and objectives of this are, because they have altered in so many ways. You know, what Ian Barnes is kind of coming out and saying is basically that this is about us all taking up cycling, and you know, and also that, you know, that there's a, you know, there's an obesity issue with our children. We're not even kind of touching on that in terms of, you know, what the consultation kind of currently is. Look, what we currently have, I know you've asked me a very direct question there of what would I prefer. So I'm going to say what this currently is that, so you're quite right. You know, there's a very strange encounter from, you know, from some of our councillors there, and just how, you know, how connected they are with, you know, with organisations that are very pro this, and therefore, you know, clearly showing their bias. And what that does is that that just breaks down trust, right? So one of the things, you know, I really do not feel across the borough that there is very much trust at all in Councillor Ian Barnes, and possibly not with the council leader as well. And, you know, one of the things that I've kind of asked for is that Ian Barnes is not at all associated and involved in this consultation. And I believe that what has happened is that there is an independent company that is going to be running this now, but that they themselves are incredibly pro-cycling. So the independent company is ITPworld.net. You know, what we want it to be is that we want it to have very clear aims and objectives that is based upon where the funding came from, right? So that it meets that criteria and that it is independently regulated.
They say, don't they, that they do say that, you know, this is going to be operating for 6 months and there's consultation in between that. I mean, Philip, does that reassure you, or do you think that's too long and you won't get the consultation you want?
It doesn't hugely reassure me. I mean, we're now going to have a month of lockdown, where the traffic numbers miraculously will go down, supporting some various arguments. I mean, Mr. Barnes apparently objected to one of the petitions that was pulled out by the local residents because people had commented in it who didn't live in the Lakes Estate. Well, the Lakes Estate isn't just the residents of the Lakes Estate, it's the people in Bounds Green, it's the people in Winchmore Hill, as Neil has noticed, walking up, you know, it affects all, it's part of an organic lung, and it's the whole thing works together. It doesn't work if you just have one section working. So,
okay. Yeah. Coming back to another point, which I think lots of people have raised, or some people have raised, is that if you're opposed to something, it's not enough just to oppose it. People think, oh, they're moaning. You really need to come up with an alternative. Sue, have any of you come up with an alternative?
Yeah, well, I think I look at it slightly differently because we are not traffic engineers or planners. And the reality is, because of where we are surrounded by the North Circular, which is run by Transport for London, and Bounds Green Road, which is run by Haringey. So any traffic scheme, and you know, Philip is quite right, you know, all of these areas are connected to each other. And what's been shown very amply is that by closing down some of our roads, that's affecting traffic all the way up to Alderman's Hill and Bourne Hill and all the way around there, and in the other direction up to Curling Hatch Lane. So any traffic management scheme that we have that helps to regulate and calm traffic a bit has to be done in conjunction with other authorities, with Transport for London and Haringey, and arguably even Barnet as well. What we've got is a piecemeal implementation of LTNs. And the whole role of Transport for London is to be strategic. I mean, London is London. It's totally interconnected. We are interconnected, you know, across, not, you know, we're not a standalone borough, an island. And so for us to suggest an alternative, I think just wouldn't be sufficient. This is far, far bigger than us.
Okay, I understand that. So I guess what you're saying is that, I mean, you can bring up the shortfalls of a system, but because it involves Barnet and Haringey and LTL, it needs to be strategically planned. And these people need to get together and consult you about what you think should be there. It's not your job to make the plan, it's their job. That they should listen, and I understand that. And but you know, getting close to the end, Andrew, you know, you have said, and Sue has said, that you believe in a clean environment, you believe in traffic calming. Yeah, the car is important, but right across the world, the car is coming under criticism for all sorts of reasons. And London, the Better Streets people believe that as well. Do you think there's any way in which you can get together and at least come up with some sort of common approach, or is that time not ready yet? Do you think there's hope for that?
No, I'm really, really up for that. You know, it's obviously something which is slightly complicated now because of the current circumstances of lockdown, but I think that the you know, we're in a complex situation right now where there is a lot of fear generally within society, largely because of COVID. But you know that what this has done is that this is, you know, the LTNs have been very, very divisive things, and I agree with the gist of what you're kind of saying, Francis, in that there's there's probably an awful lot of common ground between us. Yes, I personally would be, you know, completely up for trying to find solutions, and hopefully we can.
Okay. Well, maybe we can get that message across next week as well and see how they respond to that, because that would be really good. Okay, finally then, Sue, if anybody wanted to find out more about what you're doing, what your objections are, what your concerns and fears are, how would they get in contact with you, and who would they contact?
Well, we'd be delighted to talk to people, because you know, I think it's important that people really have an in-depth understanding of it. So we've got a lovely new website, which is boundsandbowsvoice.com. So you can actually have a look at that. And just a bit of a plug, but we do have a funding campaign going. So if anyone wants to contribute, there's a link there. We also have a WhatsApp group and a Facebook page, and it's all under our name, which is Bounds and Bo's Voice. And there's also an email address, which is boundsandbo'svoice at gmail.com. So we'd be delighted to talk to people, to, you know, just to explain the issues in, you know, in great depth. And, you know, what I would say, Francis, is thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to actually, you know, have a bit of a discussion about it, because it could be much longer, because we just don't feel that we have many forums in which we can do that right now. So thank you very much.
Okay, well, you know, you're welcome, and Better Streets and their supporters will be on next week. And that's on November the 11th. And it's quite interesting, isn't it? You know, you probably could hear behind me the fireworks. It's November the 5th today. And so we've got the fire today, and we're doing the one with Better Streets people on November the 11th, which is Armistice Day. So maybe we can somehow get people together, and I hope we can. But I'm really pleased you came on, and I'm really pleased you put your voice over. You know, I believe that voices should be heard. You shouldn't drown them out, and they should be heard from both sides. People should be able to tell their story without an argument. And I think you've done that well, and I'm really pleased that you've come on today. And I look forward to the one next week as well. And as I say, I just hope we somehow can bring people together on this, because it's created so much enmity. That's not good for our communities. So let's hope that, you know, changes. Anyhow, thank you all again. And, you know, we'll end this interview now.